Thank you, Simon, and good morning, everyone. It's been lovely to have that passage read to us so beautifully. Thank you. It was lovely to listen to the story of Ruth, and I want to get to that in a few minutes. But I want to begin by telling you a story. The story is about a minister and his wife who were looking after a growing, flourishing church in another country far from here. And the church was very busy. There were lots of things going on. The minister was very busy. His wife got very busy also. There were lots of people. And anywhere there are people, there are problems, aren't there? So there were lots of pastoral needs as well. And the wife loved to get alongside people and listen to them, share their needs and give them a shoulder to cry on, pray with them. And she loved to do that. And so everything was going well. The church was flourishing. Lots of people were coming. And then one day, everything began to unravel. In 1 week, there were 2 diagnoses of cancer. There was a marriage floundering. And the final straw happened when a young woman came to visit the pastor's wife, and she was suicidal. And the wife sat and listened to her and helped her as best she could. And when the young woman left, the wife felt, "I feel exactly the same way." That woman was me. And at that stage, I was diagnosed with depression. I was given medication and I was told I needed counselling. And that was the start of a very long journey for me to get out of a very long black tunnel. And that's why I'm here today, because out of my brokenness, Jesus came and ministered to me. And I want to tell other people that Jesus does the same thing for them. And Kintsugi Hope, as you've heard from Lorraine, is something that we as a parish can use to explore our brokenness together. Because as Simon says, we're all broken in one way or another. So I want to begin this morning by explaining why mental health matters. And the next slide is probably an image that some of you might be aware of, a huge big dog, which depicts depression, the black dog of depression, which comes and sits on our shoulder when we are suffering from depression. And we feel very, very small, and we feel overshadowed by this black dog. So I want to begin by debunking some myths around depression, and then we're going to look at the story of Naomi and Ruth. So the first myth that I want to debunk is that a depressed person just needs to cheer up. We all have bad days, don't we? We all feel bad from time to time. And if you've never been depressed, you probably think, well, you know, just cheer up. Life is not as bad as all of that. And actually, if a depressed person could do that, they would. I constantly told myself that I lived in a beautiful country. I had a wonderful husband. I had 2 gorgeous girls. I had a wonderful church community, and it didn't help at all. In fact, it made me feel worse because there was nothing I could do to make myself feel better. That's the first myth. The second one is because it's not physical, it's not real. So if I came in this morning with a broken leg and I had a plaster cast and I was limping, you would all, I hope, be sympathetic and be wanting to help. But if I come in grumpy and irritable, then I may not get so much sympathy because I'm depressed, because people don't know how to help a depressed person. C.S. Lewis, in his book The Problem of Pain, has said this: mental pain is less dramatic than physical pain, but it's more common and also more hard to bear. The frequent attempt to conceal mental pain increases the burden. It's easier to say, "My tooth is aching," than to say, "My heart is broken." The third myth is, because it's a mental problem, we shouldn't talk about it. People may be uncomfortable talking about mental health. They don't know how to talk about it in ways that are sympathetic and ways that are empathetic. And so often they don't say anything. And then the person who's suffering from mental ill health feels even more isolated. Mental health, someone has said, is just as essential as physical health, but yet it's considered a private issue that you should deal with on your own, a shameful issue, while everyone else freely discusses the pills they're popping for their sore back. Number four, a depressed person just needs to be reminded of the love of God. I wish that were true, but when I was depressed, I felt numb. I didn't feel any feelings. So if you had given me really, really fantastic news or really tragic news, I would have reacted the same way because my feelings were just numb. Number five, a Christian should not be depressed. And this is a big one because we do, somewhere underneath it all, feel we shouldn't be depressed. I remember when I went to my doctor and he diagnosed me with depression. He was and still is a Christian. And he had dealt with many people who had suffered depression. And he said to me, Pauline, this is one time in your life when it's harder to be a Christian than not, because you're already feeling bad that you're depressed, and now on top of all that, you feel the guilt of being a Christian and being depressed. And he was right. There was a double thing there. Because I was a Christian, I felt I shouldn't be depressed. Number six, a Christian shouldn't take antidepressants. This is a big one as well, and I don't think there's a right and a wrong answer here. My doctor prescribed me medication, but he explained it this way. The medication's not going to make you better. It's going to hold your head above the water while you sort through the issues that have caused your depression. He was right. And I often say to people, I'm not going to tell you whether to take medication or not. Some people will, some people won't. Some people will get better without it, some people will need it. It's a personal matter. But for me, I take medication when I have a sore head. So I eventually came to the point where I recognized I need to take medication in order to get better from this as well. Number seven, the final myth, asking a depressed person if they're suicidal just puts the thought in their heads. I think a lot of us think this and we're scared to mention it. But I want to tell you, I had a really good friend who took me out for coffee and asked me, do you feel so bad that you feel life isn't worth living? And the answer was yes. And it was a real gift that she asked me that question because I needed a safe place to be able to talk about it. Now, I do want to say there's a big difference between feeling that life isn't worth living and having a plan to end your life. There's a big difference between those two things. So if you have a friend or a loved one who is in the place where they have a plan to end their life, you need to get them help right away. You need not to leave them on their own. But that was a gift that my friend gave me to ask that question. So those are some of the myths around depression and mental health. And you may be wondering, what on earth are we doing talking about mental health in church? We normally come to church to worship God, and we have done that, to pray to God, and we have done that, and to hear from his word, and we are going to do that. Because actually, although the Bible, as far as I'm aware, Simon can correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think it ever mentions the words mental health. But it has an awful lot to say about our mental well-being, our emotional well-being. You know that over a third of the Psalms are Psalms of lament, and they give us the words to use when we feel all kinds of emotions. You probably remember the story also of King Saul. When he felt low and melancholy, he would have the young man David come and play music to him. And that helped him. So there are all kinds of snippets of people suffering from mental ill health or emotional problems in their lives throughout the Bible. And there are stories that also illustrate this. And we've read this morning from the story of Ruth and Naomi. As chapter 1 says, Naomi lived in the land of Moab. Sorry, she lived in the land of Bethlehem in Judah, the very birthplace of Jesus. And Bethlehem of Judah means house of bread. So she lived in a place where there was plenty. She had a husband, she had two sons, and she had a community of God's people around her. She had everything that she wanted. But one day, or over a period of days, her life began to unravel. And first of all, famine struck the land, and the family decided to move to Moab. So Naomi lost her home. That was her first loss. And then she had a whole series of losses. First her husband died, then her two sons died. And with that, there were just multiple losses. Because with her husband and two sons dying, she lost her identity. There was now no future to her tribe. And she lost her security, her financial security. There was now no one to provide for her. So she was absolutely destitute. And the Bible tells us right in chapter 1 here that Naomi was left without. So she had all of these losses and she was left without. I want you to remember that because I think it's a brilliant description. She was left without so many things. And Paul Miller, who's written a brilliant book about this, says, Naomi has lost her life. She has entered into a living death. Living outside of Israel is already a partial death. Now, with the death of her husband and two sons, Naomi's life is functionally over. Now, many of us have suffered grief. Many of us have lost loved ones. And if we haven't by this point, we will, because it's the nature of living in a broken world. And you will know that along with the loss of your loved one comes other losses. You lose the relationship you had with that loved one. You lose the role that they played in your life. And so this was true of Naomi as well. She had lost all of these things and she was left without. The second thing we learn about Naomi is that she lamented. Naomi's losses led her to lament. And it's interesting to see how she interprets her grief. We are all interpreters. Every single day we are interpreting things around us, what people say, what people do, what life means. We are meaning makers. We are always making sense or failing to make sense out of things that happen to us in our lives. And this is what Naomi did. And we read in chapter 1, verse 13. This is what she says. Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. That was her interpretation. The hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And often when we are struggling with grief or with another emotion that is overwhelming us, we see things through that filter. We see everything through that lens. And it leads us to make sense of our lives in a way that we may not at another time. Later on in the chapter, Naomi says this when she eventually makes her way home to Bethlehem, Judah, along with Ruth. And the townswomen all gather with great excitement. Is this Naomi? Is this Naomi? And she says, no, don't call me Naomi. Call me Mara. For the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And she was a bitter woman. Mara meant bitter. And her grief had made her bitter. Because her interpretation was, God's hand is against me. And that was why she was bitter. But she does make her way home. And I think it's interesting that actually making her way home was the first step back towards God and towards the healing that he wanted to offer her. And it's always a good thing to go back home. It's always a good thing to look for God in the middle of our brokenness. It was as if Naomi's life was in broken pieces all around her, and she was turning them this way and that, trying to find where God was. And she found God. She went back home and she found God. And as the story begins to unfold, and Boaz, of course, comes into the picture, Ruth meets Boaz in the fields where she's gone out to find some food, Naomi begins to realize May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. So at last she's getting a glimpse that God is with her. God's hand is not against her in her brokenness. God is with her in her brokenness. And that is the message of the Bible. That is the message of redemption. And that is the message of Kintsugi Hope, that in our brokenness, God is actually with us. So the final thing about Naomi is that we experience the whole of the women coming together in liturgy, in celebration of what God has done. Because not only does he provide a redeemer for Naomi, but he provides a husband for Ruth. And of course, he is the father to a little baby who is born. And this is the beautiful ending to the story of Ruth. Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you is more to you than seven sons, and she's given birth to him. So remember, Naomi was left without. Now everything has been restored. There was death, now there's life. There was lament, now there's liturgy. There was brokenness, now there's blessing. And so it is with us, because of course this little baby was the ancestor to another little baby who would be born in exactly the same place, Bethlehem of Judah, and would become our Redeemer. And he would become the one who would bring blessing in our brokenness and would give us cause for liturgy in our lament. And so he was the one who went to the cross and gave everything he had. His life was broken, his body was broken, so that we could be redeemed, we could be restored, and we would know new life again. So the end of this story is also the end of our story. Blessed be the Lord, who has not left us this day without a redeemer. Thank you.